Welcome to the Beekeeper's Corner Podcast. September 28th, 2025, episode 283, The Guy.
Hello, everyone. Welcome into the corner, the Beekeeper's Corner. I'm Kevin England. For this episode today, I have a guest, James Zdebski. I had promised to bring James onto the show, and I'm excited that we finally get to connect, albeit a little late, and I'll explain that in a second. And I want to say welcome to the show, James.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Kevin.
So I told James we were going to meet at 7 o'clock, and at 7:45, I figured out that I was wrong. I thought it was 8 o'clock, and I'm embarrassed. But James, you're such a good trooper. And I appreciate you accommodating me. And well, let's talk about this for a second. Episode 277, the episode name was Nostalgia. Tim Schuler spoke at a state meeting, and there was a little tidbit in his talk all the way through. When you unearthed some information about the history of the New Jersey Beekeepers Association and passed it along to Tim, and it is that was the catalyst for the two of us to talk. And I want to ask you a little bit about that journey. But the first thing I want to say is, welcome to the show. You and I, we know each other because we're both part of the Northwest New Jersey Beekeepers Association. And I know you're the guy. You know how I know that, James?
My brother
Keith lives in the same community as you, not too far from you. And when I told him I was going to talk to you today, he said to me, do you know he's the guy? So do you know you're the guy in your town?
No, I have no idea that I'm the guy.
What he said is every time somebody brings up something about beekeeping in that area where you guys live, everybody says the guy you need is James Zdebski. I didn't know if you knew that. I thought that was funny as could be. So you're apparently the guy. And so I know, you know, fourth generation beekeeper. I know you have a lot of hives. You and I, we interact. You help maintain and coordinate the mentoring yard where we keep bees for the Northwest New Jersey. And I have to say, in watching you from the sidelines, that you're one of the most prolific, busiest beekeepers who works a full-time job that I think, you know, you got to be in the top five. And we're going to unpack a little of that before we talk about the Tim Schuler story. So tell me a little bit about you as a beekeeper. How long have you been keeping bees? How many bees do you have? Tell me a little bit about the property that you keep your bees on and places you keep bees. And I know you have a beekeeping like company, you sell queens and nukes and things like that. So give everybody a little snapshot of your operation so people know who you are.
Okay. Thanks for having me, Kevin. This is great fun, by the way, from my mentor interviewing me. So my name is James Zdebski. I live in Holland Township, New Jersey, which mailing address of Milford, New Jersey. I'm a lifelong resident, moved away for a dozen years or so, just across the river, back again in Holland Township. Been here so all my 61 years. How did I start beekeeping? Grew up on Stamets Road in Holland Township, and we had a neighbor, an old Lithuanian man, Anthony Duda. We knew him as Pop Duda. Pop Duda passed away when I was 13, and his grandson, I think, was to be nice, I felt a little apprehensive about taking over the bees. I think he's actually a little scared of them. He knew my father had kept bees when my father was younger. So he gave us Pop's 13 colonies or a dozen colonies. And being 13 years old, my father said, you know, boys, you're going to take care of the bees. And that's how it started. I kept them into my 20s. Well into my 20s. And then, you know, of course, a young guy in his mid-20s, early 20s, finds other interests. And I just neglected them. But my brother Mark, moved back east from out west, and he kept the hives going for a long time. And then I got away, and then a friend moved away. A good friend, Sam Cousins, moved to Maine, and he and his wife, Annie, gifted me with their woodenware from a couple hives that they had had. And that was in 2019, and I jumped in with both feet again. And I have gone from two colonies in 2019 to currently somewhere in the neighborhood of 60.
Wow. You're like me. You have full-size hives, new hives, this hive, that hive. You got a hodgepodge. I've seen your yard. It's just a mix of all kinds of things going on at once. You know, the funny thing I'll say to you is I met your brother, Mark, before I met you. I didn't even know you. Your brother came and he had a really bad case of European foul brood, and I was helping him kind of diagnose and deal with that. And he had mentioned he had a brother, James, who kept bees, and I didn't even know that you were there. And then all of a sudden you were on the scene, and I haven't seen him in years, I don't think.
He gave it up just a couple of years ago, and I was keeping bees, two colonies at his place. He's down in Stockton, so about 40 minutes south, down in your neck of the woods, kind of.
Yeah.
And so I was maintaining those two colonies, and then on Facebook, I saw a bear about 300 yards away from the colonies, and we didn't have a bear fence down there. So I went down the next day and picked those colonies and brought them up here. So we don't connect with the bees as much as we did. So I need to put a couple more down there or wrangle him to help me up here.
You just did the bear fence thing at the meeting on Saturday. So
yeah.
What I remember about James or about Mark is he had a barn with the most amazing stash of wood projects going on. And that ties back to you and what you do for a living. Talk about that.
We all have splinters in our veins. So I am 40 years a cabinet maker, furniture maker, restoration carpentry. I'm currently I'm an operations manager in a large millwork shop. We have, I think, a 28 maybe in the shop. Work for Bednark Studios. They're out of Brooklyn, and we're a satellite shop in Easton, Pennsylvania. And we do high-end commercial millwork, store fit-outs, and some very well-known high-end boutiques.
Wow.
So that's where it keeps me busy during the day. And then when I come home, it's trying to keep up with 60 colonies, because for some reason I thought that was a good idea.
Is that something you do every night? I mean, it must be, right? Feels
yeah,
like
nearly so. It rained the other day, so I mixed up 9 gallons of syrup in the laundry room sink. Well, not in the sink, but using the sink. But yeah, there's always something to do, it seems. I go out there. I know you work. You develop a plan and then work the plan. But me, I walk out and I look at the colonies, and I kind of got an idea of what I need to do to each one, but I catch up with as many as I can, feed as many as I can. I'm raising nukes like you, so there's always hives to be fed.
How do you have your colonies arranged in your property?
I have four rows on rails. I have 2-inch pipe rails, like a 2-inch black pipe. And I have them set up, they're set about knee high. And then I have four rows and in basically pairs, and they face out from each other. So I have an aisle behind two rows that there's very little bee flight. So I'm never standing in their flight path.
Yeah.
And that I originally had them started out all facing south. And then I realized, with bees in the back of my head, that wasn't working. And I turned them around, and it works really well. So I have,
Yeah, go ahead.
50 plus at home. Many of those are nukes.
I mentioned the hodgepodge thing because every once in a while you shoot me off a photo and you have full size colonies and then three nukes and a full size colony and one that's 7 foot high. And it seemed to me that like it's just a compendium of different hives and different states, all kind of mixed as a jumbled. Is that accurate or is that just a
That's pretty accurate. There's probably only inches or a foot between them. And yeah, there, I've had production colonies that I was producing honey with that stacked 8 or 9 boxes high. One of them, which was a cutout, gave me 175 pounds of surplus honey 2 years ago.
Wow.
And right next to them right now is a nuc. Actually, it's the parent queen that I split off into a nuc this spring, and now she's in 5 frames and stacked 6 boxes high. I just didn't want to give her up. I didn't want to send those genetics off. So I have her daughter as the production, and she was kind of a resource hive. I pulled a lot of brood out of her this year.
I mean, it kind of makes sense to set it right next door rather than carry her off and have to deal with all of that. And you can tie the two together. And so everybody has their system. How do you keep track of your to-do list? You
Blue
just go
masking
out and
tape.
look. I know you're somebody that writes on the top of their hives, right?
Yes. Yep. Blue masking tape on top of the hive or on the back of the box. A lot of it's on the back of the box anymore because I learned pretty quickly that those hives get tall and it's hard to read the top without a ladder. So I usually put a strip of tape across the back and put my notes there. And they're
So
pretty meager.
you restarted in 2019
Yeah.
from keeping bees in your childhood. What was the difference? You didn't have Varroa in your childhood?
No, nothing. We just basically pulled honey when we wanted some honey. I used to sell it a 2 pound jar for $2. And I think my parents thought it was high priced because it was all to their friends. But the colonies were stacked high, 3 or 4 boxes, all deeps, of course, back then, Langstroth. And we didn't do a lot. If we had a testy hive, my father would get a mail order queen, from probably from Root, I'm thinking. I don't know where
Yeah,
he
hey, Irene.
back then, but and that was about all we ever had to do. I remember watching swarms go across the front yard and disappear into the trees across the road. But I was deathly afraid of them when I was young. And by the time I was 15, I was working them without protection. I
Did
don't
you
know why.
ever
Maybe.
join a beekeepers association or part of meetings or anything back then?
No, not till I joined it and you were the instructor. Not until 2019, and then COVID hit, and then we did it all via Zoom.
So tell me the Tim Schuler commentary where you unearthed the information about the New Jersey Beekeepers Association by serendipity. What were you looking for?
So, as I don't know if I said in the beginning, I'm a fourth generation beekeeper, and I had heard through a cousin of mine who lives in Virginia now that she had seen a photo of my great grandfather and great grandmother at a beekeeping convention, and they were holding name tags. And so I knew this photo existed, so I joined Ancestry.com, went through a whole year of subscription, never found the photo. I joined, rejoined Ancestry, and then I joined newspapers.com. And I searched many, many nights. And his name is Henry Mull, and his wife is Dina. So I was searching for Henry and Dina Mull and New Jersey Beekeepers, New Jersey Beekeepers Association, and I never got a hit. And through that process, I stumbled upon two books via Google, I think it's Google Play Books. It's the scans on the public domain of Google, and they were the very first minutes of New Jersey Beekeepers Association from the very first meeting of, I believe it was 1906. Six members met in New York City, of all places, and started the New Jersey Beekeepers Association. So I found those, saved them, and just because I found them to be interesting and continued on my search. And then I heard through David Waldman, our past president, that Tim was the historian for our club or our state association. So I passed those links on to Tim. And I believe at the state meeting, he referenced a couple of those books.
I have to say thanks. I mean, you know, I made the recording of him talking about that, and I'm betting you listened to it because I know you listened to the show. And from the bottom of my heart, thank you, because that stuff is just, I think that's amazing when you get to trace the lineage and hear the stories and understand how we got, you know, where we came from. You know, when I talk to my twin sometimes, he says, I go where I'm pointed. I'm going to laugh at that comment. But, you know, if you figure out where you were pointed from, you figure out where you came from. And I have to say, the story that he told that you unearthed was amazing. And so I interrupted you. Keep going, because you were on a quest.
So I was on a quest to find my great-grandparents, because I knew I was fourth generation, but I needed to prove it to myself. And one night I was sitting in my chair, and I had kind of given up for a while searching, and I don't know what search I used. And I stumbled upon that photo, and I was giddy with excitement. It was about 11 o'clock at night. Nobody cares but me, you know, but I was so excited I found it. So here it was in The Gleanings of Bee Culture, published in 1914. I think it's January 15th, 1914. It is volume 42, number 2. So if any of your listeners out there have their hands on one of these old ones, I would love to get a hard copy. And it was a article about the summer meeting of 1913. Of the New Jersey Beekeepers Association. It was in Red Bank, New Jersey. I believe the president of the club was Root. I can't think of his first name, but is, I believe, the grandson of A.I. Root. He was the president of the club at the time, and I think it was a beekeeper named Glover in Red Bank. And they had the foresight to line all the attendees up. There were 63 attendees. They gave them each a placard with a number on it, and they must have written their name on the back of that placard. And there is a list of everyone in the photo, and they're identified who they are. And my great grandfather Henry Mall and great grandmother Dina are in that photo from June 25th, 1913.
Wow. So, I mean, let's think about that, right? Somebody in 1913 had the foresight to do this, and it's 112 years later, right? Yeah. It's 112 years later, and you stumble upon it. Why? Because somebody made a point, and I go back to, and you know this, recently at the New Jersey Beekeepers Association, they do the picture of everybody who's participating. I'm sorry, at the EAS conference for the last couple of years. I was sitting in a historical meeting a couple of years back, and they showed a picture of some of the first meetings of EAS, and they had a picture of all the participants. And I said, boy, that's really cool. And I want to say it was Massachusetts. So I went to the president of EAS and said, there's steps out there. Call everybody, have them come and get in this picture. And who knows, 100 years from now, somebody's going to look at that and go, there's James Zdebski, right? And find the same quest. And I think that's so cool. What a neat story. So I can't believe you found the photo. One, the photo had to be there. Two, somebody had to record who the participants were. And three, it had to be indexed, right? Because the names were probably written somewhere.
and someone transcribed them. Where did you find it? Where did was the ultimate place where you located it?
So it came up on the Google Play. It's someone scanned all these AI root or not AI root the gleanings of bee culture magazines into the Google Play, and Google gave me the hit. So there's several, I forget how many are in this one scan, but it's from the 1915 or 1914 copy. So I got the hit on Google. I don't remember how, and it took me right to that page, and because it recognized the name I had typed, I must have had Henry Mall or Henry Andina Mall, D-I-N-A. She spelled it both ways, D-E-N-A and D-I-N-A. And I believe I spelled it D-I-N-A, and it had highlighted the text of their name is when I first found it.
So we have to go on a quest. I'll make a request of the listeners right here. Somebody, see if they can figure out if anybody has a hard copy of this magazine. Gleanings of Bee Culture, Volume 42, Number 2.
Yes.
It's a long shot, but given the power of people, you never know, James. How cool would it be to have that in your collection?
Oh, I'd be forever indebted. I've searched eBay. I haven't found it on eBay. I found a bunch of them on eBay. Yeah. But not that issue. Not that issue.
There are services that will take old magazines and reprint them for you if you have a decent electronic copy of it. But, you know, thinking back, the picture was taken in 1914, 1913, and it only got reported on in 1914. You have to think about the times. Like, they were using telegraphs and teletypes, and there was no, you know, think about what the phone was like, phone systems and all that stuff. It was 1913. You heard Tim talking about, you know, the state apiarist would go to a town riding a horse sometimes in those days, right? So that was really cool. Do you know where, what location they were in when they were keeping bees? Were they in New Jersey?
Yes. Yeah. So actually, I believe I can say that I am fourth generation Holland Township beekeeper.
Oh, so they were in Holland, Hunterdon County.
Well, he lived in Newark. Yeah. But my grandfather bought a farm in Holland Township. He on Hawksglass Road, I think 120 acre farm. And he's in 1918, my grandfather William Mull, the eldest son of Henry. And he kept that farm until 1928. And sold it to take over Henry's business in Irvington, New Jersey, and sold it right before the Depression. How's that for timing?
Wow.
So William kept bees. My great aunt kept bees. I have a photo of her from about the 1930s. My Tante Marta, great aunt Marta Mull, and right there in Holland Township. And for a period of time, my friend Mike Hammerstone owns the farm now, and he gave me a copy of the deeds. And there was a transfer of the deed back to Henry Mull for 2 years from William. So I thought, I wonder if Henry had bees on the farm.
Yeah.
Because it was in about 1924. You know, it was 11 years after this photo was taken. So I think I could say Henry probably kept bees in Holland Township for a period of time. And then my grandfather, William, had bees on the Hawksglass Road, and then again on River Road here in Holland Township, where he lived until he died. And then my father had bees on Stamets Road in Holland Township. So
I almost hate to talk about this because of the fact that when somebody names something as beautiful, it becomes it isn't beautiful anymore, right? But I have to say, and you and I were talking about this just before we started recording, I went out to work in Broadway, New Jersey, and had to drive over to Doylestown, New Jersey, and I drove right past where you live, and it is God's country. In all of New Jersey, you live in some of the most beautiful area, pristine, beautiful place, rolling hills, river. You're right next to the Musconetcong River, the Delaware River. Your community is just a spectacular, beautiful place to live. And I when I was driving through it, it's almost like the land time forgot. A lot of nice old hardwood forests and pastures and, cornfields and things like that. You're really fortunate. So where you have your bees, how do you feel that you stack up from the forage area of what they have available to them?
I think that they really have quite a diverse forage. And my bees make honey when other people's aren't. I had a couple hives at my brother Mark's. He's probably, as a crow flies, maybe 2 to 2.5 miles from the Delaware River, but up on top of the hill. And a couple of years ago, the bees down there made zero honey. And up here at my place, I'm a quarter of a mile from the Delaware, right? And just a few hundred feet from the Musconetcong. And I made lots of honey. There was no shortage whatsoever. And he had a drought down there. He's only like 20 miles south of me. But I think it's really that my proximity to the river that we get morning fog. So these plants are getting bathed with fog, and even during dry spells, I still have.
Well, plus anything near a river, you have different trees growing that tend to be close to water and things like that. I know, like Charles Ilsley, one of our friends, mm-hmm. he lives close to a river, and he says the same thing to me that, there's times when these linden trees and other things that are blooming, are only going in his zone. And I know that people who live along rivers tend to have different plants, and that parlays to your honey is amazing. By all the blue ribbons on the wall behind you and all the blue ribbons I see in our cabinets every year, both at the Northwest New Jersey Hunterdon Fair, Warren Fair, New Jersey Beekeepers Association. And how did you do this year at EAS? I didn't keep track of that.
I think I entered 13 categories, and I came home with 11 ribbons and a blue ribbon in the gadgets, and I won the plate in the gadgets, and quite a few second and third place in the honey photography, I think. A couple second places. I lost track. I think I am.
I'm astonished how you find the time for this. I mean, I would love to enter honey contests, but I don't have the time. And you're working a full time job. You've got 60 hives, and you're still doing. Like, do you sleep?
A little.
Not much.
To be honest with you, I won best in show with my candles. Warren, I think, and second place at EAS. I literally turned the hot plate on at 11:30 p.m. Yeah. And I poured the candles at 12:30 a.m. and I dropped the candles off at the fairgrounds at 12 p.m. 12 hours later. So
luck of the Blarney there. Well, but let's talk about serendipity. I know you work hard. You got all those hives, and one of the things, let's pivot to your passion for queen rearing, and the amount of work you've been doing in that lately is exemplary. And Corey Stevens queens, your own queens, other stock that you've brought in. Talk a little bit about your pursuits recently with your queen operation. What you have going on?
I started listening to Corey Stevens a couple of years ago, just off and on, and then he really drew me in. And watching some other beekeepers also, like Jeff Horshoff, Mr. Ed on YouTube. Just listening to, he doesn't treat, has never treated for 14 or 15 years, and his losses are like 23 to 28%. And then in a bad year, I had 29%, and I treated with strictly oxalic acid vaporization. And I just started thinking, oh my gosh, here I am treating, working hard treating every weekend, 50, 60 colonies, and Corey hasn't treated in 15 years. Jeff Horshoff hasn't treated in 15 years, and he has almost the same losses. And then I was watching Carol Wagner with her UBO say that Corey's bees scored the highest on the UBO test of anyone she had ever tested. And they have used her UBO all over the world. So, of course, I had to have some. So I ordered some Virgin Queens last spring. I think I got 10.
Wait, let's talk about that in detail. I don't want to gloss over that. How did they come? Tell me about the process of getting Corey's Queens, how they arrived, what you did with them.
Okay. He sells only Virgin Queens. I guess he would sell a breeder if you so wanted. But he sells Virgin Queens, and you open mate those queens. So just set up little mating nukes, two or three frames. Last year I did two frames. I realized that was a mistake. It really needs to be three frames. It's just not the population that, even though they get mated, it's hard to get them started on two. So this year I did three frame. Last year was two frame. And you set up your mating nuke. You tape over the candy plug. This is Corey's instruction with duct tape. You put your queen into the inner queen cage, into the mating nuke, and then you come back after a week. She's been taped in there for a week, and you go through your frames and destroy every cell or cup that you can find in there, because the bees want to raise their own queen from their own stock before they will accept
yes, yeah,
a former queen. So it's really important that you get back in there and destroy those cells. And now they're, after a week, now they are hopelessly queenless. Then you peel the tape off and let them finish chewing the candy plug out. But unfortunately, on my first round,
I'm going to ask 10. A dumb guy question on behalf of the audience who's thinking about this. The queen in the cage, is she a capped cell or is she an actual emerged queen but not mated?
She's an emerged queen but not mated.
Okay.
A virgin queen.
Because there are people who sell you, you can go to some of them and they'll sell you an actual capped cell that you put in and let the queen emerge out of that. But you don't take those and put them in queen cages. But just to be clear, this is a queen who has emerged and has been put into a queen cage and shipped to you overnight with a candy plug. And yes. Now you're following that process.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. And Corey's weather is very similar.
I think he also sells, doesn't he sell? I don't know why. I think maybe it's not him and maybe it's others. They sell actually capped cells, don't they? Won't they
ship a
capped cell?
I think he did for a time. He might have, but you know they're kind of fragile to ship.
Yes. So you could. Yeah. You got to get them at the right end of the. Yeah. Most of the time you would go pick one of those up. That's why I was wondering. Just for clarity's sake, what you were getting. Okay.
Yeah. So virgin queens and open mating. So my first round, I followed his instructions to a T, and I put strips of duct tape over the candy plug, and I came back out 2 days later, and four of my colonies know how to peel duct tape. And they had they had peeled the duct tape down, chewed them out, and killed her.
Oh, no.
And so I had the JZBZ, the lavender caps in my garage from my own.
You just plugged them up. Yeah. Okay.
And it just, you know, it just never struck me that you don't need to use duct tape. You've got the caps. And he ships them without the caps because they don't fit in that that ammo box or whatever they call it, where they ship the JZBZ.
Yeah. Right. Yep.
That reminds me of the story of Bob Ross and I put all our queens in little JZBZ cages, and they push the plug up, and they can do that, which we were like, I couldn't believe it. So we ended up having to put duct tape over the plug to keep them from pushing it up so that they could get out. The bees pulled it out, and just like what you're saying, right? So it's pretty amazing. Yeah. You think about if they're stuck inside of a cavity, say something happens and they have to chew their way out or whatever, they got nothing but time and they're industrious. They can do this kind of stuff, right?
Yeah.
Duct tape. That's funny.
So I managed to overwinter, I think, 6 of them. And I have, they're still going. Some are stronger than others. But what's pretty exciting is that 2 of them have never been treated since last spring. So they've gone 2 full seasons now. One washed to 0 and one washed, one mite in 300. And these are massive colonies. The one was 4 deeps high with a super on it. And the reason it was 4 deeps is I had done a split with, they were getting ready to swarm, and I split them late in the day. But that queen never came back, and they had gone to lay in worker because I was too busy with my other colonies to check on them. And I thought, what am I, and again, it was late in the day, I thought, what am I going to do with this double deep laying worker colony? It was laying worker, or it was, she was a drone layer.
Yeah,
I think it was a drone layer because of the patterns I was seeing, but it was just before dark. And I thought, what am I going to do? And I turned around and I looked at the matriarch's colony right behind me. And I just said, all right, if anybody can deal with a whole bunch of drones and possibly a high mite count, you can. And I dropped those 2 deep boxes on top of the matriarch of that colony. And they...
Wow, that is a brave soul.
They dispatched with many of the drones, got rid of them, cleaned them out. And when I mite washed them in the middle of July, they had 1 in 300 and then a 0 just a few weeks ago. So, I mean, they if anybody should have had a high mite count, it was that one.
Yeah. Wow.
So I'm my ultimate goal, and this is a long-term goal, is to be able to test these colonies with UBO and be able to confidently sell varroa sensitive hygiene queens that have been tested. I sell nukes. I don't sell queens. There's too much work involved in raising them.
Yeah.
So, but I want to be able to sell nukes with VSH queens and proven VSH queens. It's not going to, I bought 20 more, 2 dozen more queens this year. So I think about a third of my colonies right now are Corey's genetics. And I'm seeing low mite counts in almost all of them. So I'm on the path. It's going to probably take another year or two before I feel like I could part with those queens. So we're having enough of them. But
do you get stingy or like possessive of them? I bet you do, right? I would.
Oh yeah. Especially the good ones, you know. And I'm selling nukes in the spring, and then I have to have this argument with myself of which ones to sell. And I only want to sell good colonies. I'm not going to sell a poor colony or a poor performer. When my nukes go out, they are literally stuffed with bees.
I'm wrestling with the same thing. I'm not trying to put the cart before the horse, but I just made all these nukes over in the side yard. And if everything goes okay, I might try to sell one or two in the spring, but I'm like, how can I part with them? After all the work you do for them, right? I mean, they become your babies, right?
What I've been doing, I do exactly the same as Aaron.
Aaron Evans.
Thank you, Aaron Evans does. So I'm watching for swarm cells in the spring, and as soon as I see a cell, I search and I find that parent queen, and I split her off into a nuke.
Yeah,
and she becomes my overwinter. And I leave that, I leave the parent colony to then raise a replacement. I throw honey supers on top, let them make honey while they're making a queen, and I let that overwintered queen fill out that box and make a real strong nuke, and then that's the nukes I sell. So someone's getting a strong, just they've only been through one season,
yep,
of buildup. Sometimes it's late, you know, they may have been replaced as a super sieger late in the season, so they might be a fresh young queen. But that's how I make my nukes. And
I mean, my thought is plan the work, work the plan. But when it comes to this, it's got to be ad hoc. I just don't know what is going to happen in the spring. And
yeah,
I might change my mind if I try to sell anything. But, you know, one of the questions I want to ask you is, you're 20 minutes as the crow flies from my twin. And he started keeping bees and he said, there's no bees in this area. And I laughed at him. Like, of course there's bees in this area. There's bees all over the place in New Jersey specifically. And by him, there's a really big operation right by him. There's operations over by the airport. There's beekeepers just down the road from him on the same road and whatever. But you're a little further remote over by Regalsville. Do you know of other beekeepers right there in your vicinity within flying range?
Oh, yeah. Good friend Don Whitlock's just 2.5 miles. He's a member of our club as well.
Yeah,
he's 2.5 miles up the hill from me. So he has a couple of Corey's queens. So I convinced him and Rick Connect to bring some of their. I ordered 30, and Don took four, and Rick, or no, Don took two, and Rick took four. So just trying to get those genetics in the area, and I also have four colonies on Old Village Farm, which is a mile as the crow flies. So now I took two of the colonies there, so I would get drones from those colonies, hopefully mate with mine here, and then Don Whitlock, and then my bees are mating with his. So we're trying to support each other in Varroa sensitive hygienic.
We should talk, because I have a line on a really good line of bees that I know at some point I'm going to pull the plug on that, or pull the trigger on that. But if you're going to do Corey Stevens in the future, talk to me as you go through. And, you know, you and I, we've talked about with other beekeepers, it's not just us, starting some sort of queen compendium here in Hunterdon County and trying to improve the genetics of the zone, which, you know, I say there's no magic queen, mostly because there are good queens, but they're so outnumbered by everything else that dilutes the stock. But I believe this, and I want to get your take on it. You're in the woods, right? You're casting off swarms, and there's bees that are becoming feral. You've been there for the amount of time that you've been there. Do you believe that you can somehow influence the region, like you're saying, bees up the road a mile and so on? Like, would you like me to talk to my brother and get your bees over there too? And, you know, because how cool would it be if every beekeeper, you could just start making a list and check the box of that Holland Township area is using high quality queens and see what you could do. Do you know you're in the nose of New Jersey? Do you know what that means?
Yeah.
If you look at the New Jersey map, it looks like a postman. This little angled hat, and on the left side is a face, and right where you are is what would be the nose of a face, right? How cool would it be to have that whole central zone right there with as good a quality queen as you can get for the region? That would be amazing.
Yeah, I think it's achievable. Like I said, it's a long-term goal, but it certainly is. The more drones we cast, the trait is heritable. So these queens are passing it to their daughters, and they're sharing those traits with drones that are open mating with other bees. And I think we can build a Varroa sensitive trait. I think we need to, you know, yeah. You pointed out many times in your show is we've been treating for mites for about 40 years, right?
And
we haven't made a lot of headway.
Yeah, it's time. It's time to start. And I'm starting to see people talking about just random things that you see. You and I, we go on Facebook here and there, is
people do UBO tests of generic queens wherever they are, and they find out that they're finding varroa-sensitive hygiene traits. And I don't know if it's just because they have success. Those are the ones they're posting. But it was an anomaly for a period of time. But with the UBO tests, you start to see more, and you know, it's peppered with people reporting it. And these are everyday Joes, right, that are keeping bees and telling us that they're finding it. And I think the more you see evidence of people reporting that kind of stuff, the more you say, well, from a statistic, it's got to be increasing, right? It'll be just in time for tropy laylops to land.
Exactly. I think Kara Wagner said that she believed there were about 3% of the bees have the hygienic trait.
So that's not enough, right? I mean, it's we really need to.
We can build on that.
Yeah.
It'll take some time, but.
So back to the compendium, we had talked about teaching people in our zone to come learn queen rearing. We were going to use the Deer Path Yard and just start getting more and more people doing what you're doing, what I'm doing, which is trying to raise high quality queens. And if you get a handful of them, spreading those and sharing the queens or doing whatever with them, you could turn this whole zone into maybe something that is a little bit better than just the run of the mill New Jersey, which I think is fraught with peril with all the packages that come north every year.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of what started me on this. I wasn't a new beekeeper in 2019, and I probably filled your email with photos of what I was struggling with keeping two packages alive. And I was fraught with, I had a drone layer, you know, they killed the queen. She had a great pattern. They aged out. They killed the queen. I ended up with, not a drone layer, I ended up with laying worker. And then I was getting ready to go away for 12 days to New Mexico. And I opened the hive and they were full of EFB.
Oh,
you know,
that's the worst, right? When they're stressed and they're making a mess, you're like, you just want to just shake them out in the yard.
Yeah. And I kept one of them alive. And I said to myself the next year, I am going to raise hardy, healthy.
That's the one where you brought the pictures to the library, right?
Yeah.
And I was at the library and you whipped out these pictures. I'm like, oh, my God. Right. We were looking at it was almost like a horror show.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah. I was emailing you and Bob.
Yeah.
And then the next spring I thought, you know, where am I going to find some quality local bees? And I found out about Dr. Vince Aloya there in Montgomery County selling nukes. So I bought two nukes from him. And I bought four queens, I think, from Joe Zagurski.
Zagurski, yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's, other than the Corey queens, there was the last bees I bought. And I've raised the rest off of that. Cutouts I've done, you know, found some really quality bees in some of the cutouts I've done.
So that's an episode that you and I are going to have in the future. Is you could go down a whole run up about your cutout situation, and but Bob and I did the same thing, as you know, right? We were for a period of time we were doing cutouts at ferals and bees in trees, and you know, we would try to find swarms from good stock, and that's where we didn't buy any Corey Stevens queens, but we tried to do our best at having, you know, our run at treatment free and seeing how that goes. And I didn't have that much success with it. You and I talked about this, but I still believe in it. And I think there's some queen stuff that I would love to, you know, just have a sidebar with you about and do a little more, but I want to talk about 60 colonies looks good on you. And what I mean by that is, first, I have to say publicly, thank you. You've been helping me with managed mentoring. going out and visiting people. And you've been teaching for our club, and you've been doing different training things with our beginners course and whatever. And I want you to know that we appreciate you being an active participant in that community. And not only that, I sponsored you this year for EAS, and you went and took the tests cold. Like, I know you had the shingles, right? Wasn't it shingles or something? And you were having the ear problem, the balance and this and that, and you were struggling to study, but yet you went to EAS and killed 3 out of 4 tests this year. I mean, holy cow, what a year for you.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Yeah. And you were my mentor. So yeah, you're right. I ended
I was here. I don't know how much I taught you, but
well,
there's something about 60 colonies that, you know, I know you haven't added all that, but your learning curve of managing many colonies, you get to see more in a shorter period of time, and your learning curve is amazing, isn't it?
Oh yeah. Yeah. You absolutely. The more time you spend in the bees, the more you're going to learn. And I have seen so much with, you know, I've witnessed so many bees, so many queens piping, you know, watching them draw their thorax down onto the surface of the frame, so the, or the first surface of the foundation to vibrate the whole foundation.
Cool.
I've seen them come back with mating sign. I watched workers pull the phallus from a queen newly returned. And it's just because having so many hives, you got to be in them. And sometimes you just stumble upon some of the coolest stuff.
I mean, look, you could be an active participant in learning and learning and learning and learning. But what the bees teach you, real world, working, you know, you know, one of the themes that I try to do is, if I don't know, I want to do it, right? Because when you do it, you know. If you do something, you have the real world experience. And when you manage as many colonies and you help people and you go out and visit and you teach at our teaching apiary or whatever, you can't help but learn and have the bees teach you. So, yeah, I have to say I'm appreciative of all the help you gave us. And, you know, what else is there to say about that? Thank you.
Thank you. I really enjoy it. I like the hands-on and to stand shoulder-to-shoulder with a new beekeeper. There was one at Dave's house the other day, and the frame was covered with bees, and I was going to crush bees if I put it back in the colony. So I shook the bees off of it. And of course, all the new beekeepers, suddenly we had, you know, a couple hundred bees in the air, and they were taken back. And I said, they're just confused. You know, they're not aggressive. They're not defensive. They're just trying to figure out where their entrance is. So I had one other frame.
That's about the moment where I was standing in the back and got stung on the neck. That one.
maybe.
I'm only kidding, but you know me, I'm the first one to get stung standing in about 30 people.
Exactly.
I wasn't there at that time, so you're clear.
I turned to there's a younger fellow standing to my right, and I had one more covered with bees. I said, do you want to shake these? He goes, yeah. I will. Yeah. And, you know, he just lit up as he, you know, I showed him how to hold the ears of the frame and give it a sharp shake, you know, and the bees just flow off like water and into the box. You know, he was beaming. He was beaming. It was worth all the sweat and the blisters of the day, and just to see his face.
Yeah, I remember going to the spring mentor meeting, and Doug was one of our first vice president. Doug was going through the hive or whatever, and he's holding this and he's trying to explain something. And I pulled a frame out and was explaining it, and then I just handed it to the person, like, here, take it. And they were holding it like they didn't want to drop it, right? Like, oh my God, you gave me this thing, and they're holding it like they're holding a baby, like out in front of them. And I'm like, listen, it's going to be okay. Tilt the thing, look back in down into the cell we were trying to show them. And then Doug's handing things out. Next thing you know, when you stand back and look, everybody's got a frame, and they're pointing and looking and telling each other about it. And Isn't that great when you get to get a bunch of people like that and show them stuff?
Oh,
I love those moments.
It's very rewarding. It really is. And you know, I tell most of the ones I go out and mentor, and you know, they're like, I'm kind of afraid to go in a hive. They're like, I shouldn't be disturbed. I said, in my opinion, you cannot be in the hive enough. It's the only way you're going to learn is to go in and observe. They're very resilient. They really are. They're afflicted with varroa mite and some other viruses and diseases. But as a whole, bees are very tough. And for you to go in every weekend and poke around and nose around, you're not going to hurt them. But you're going to learn so much by observation.
Yeah.
More than you could ever learn on a book or a video. And I encourage everyone to spend time inside the hive.
All of your equipment is wooden hives, right? All standard laying. You don't have anything different in there, do you?
I bought my first Apame with you.
Did you?
Yeah. I haven't put any bees in it yet. I'm trying to find something that's going to fit in a 7-frame for the winter. And I haven't found that colony yet. But it's out there in the bee yard just waiting. So it's going to go into winter. I just, you know, I was curious.
I saw you wandering around the the vendor hall cruising with money. You and I were talking about
yeah.
And I don't know if I should talk about this, right? Your bee budget.
Yeah.
Your wife Deborah is the accountant apparently, and have your allocation and you're not to exceed the allocation. And I saw the gleam in your eye. Where did you save money that you were able to buy something else? I forgot what it was.
We had the threat of a flood here in New Jersey.
Oh yeah.
And I think we were going to get like 10 inches of rain or something that night. And we were only an hour and a half away.
You went home from the show
to go take care of something. I didn't want to leave Deborah here alone if we were going to have flooding rain. So I drove home that night. And so I checked out a hotel 2 days early. So I had 2 nights worth of hotel fees that I could spend in the vendor.
That's what I remember. And you were wandering around like, I have extra budget. What do I buy? You were like rubbing your hands together. Your palms itched because you had money. I was telling Sharon that story in the hallway. We were both laughing about like, this is what EAS does to you, right? As you walk around in the vendor hall. And
well, Deborah lets me, you know, actually spend wherever I feel the need, because I told myself a long time ago, no freeloaders here in the backyard. The bees have got to earn their keep. So they pay for everything. I am in the black with the bees. I sell a lot of honey and nukes and make them pay for, they bought my extractor. They, you know, I, being a cabinet maker, I don't have to buy hives.
Yeah.
All I have to buy are frames. I build all my boxes. I make my own boxes. Yeah.
You do make your own stuff.
Yeah. I have, thankfully, working in this business, we used a lot of, or actually a friend worked at a shop where it was using a lot of marine grade plywood, and they were throwing the offcuts in the dumpster. And I had him set them aside. So I ended up with these short offcuts from an end of a piece of plywood.
Are you making nukes from them, or what are you doing with that?
I make 5-frame, 10-frame. I make.
Are you doing finger joints?
No, I just do a rabbit joint.
Yeah.
A simple rabbit, 3/8 by 3/4, glue it with waterproof glue, type on 3, and I staple my boxes, no screws, just staples. And I made. Save
how many seasons do you get out of something like that? Because eventually, isn't it? I know it's marine plywood, blah blah blah, but it's going to delaminate, right? And
yeah, I have not had a single box delaminate.
Is that right?
The solid pine are failing faster.
Really?
And
it is amazing the engineering with wood these days, isn't it? It's pretty, you know, from being a wood guy. You're the wood guy. If I have to call you something, you know, if I ever had a question about wood you'd be the guy I'd ask.
My brother Mark told me 20 years ago. I used to own a sawmill for 15, 20 years, 15 years, I think. And I was milling up logs and moving lumber. And Mark looks at me, lifts his headphones up, and he goes, "Half your life story is moving wood from one pile to another."
One pile to another. I feel like that when I'm in my garage, you know. But I'm renovating my house, and I just walked around yesterday before I did some painting and picked up all these scraps off the floor. They're little tiny pieces. And I laugh at you because at the summer meeting, you brought boxes, like totes full of scraps that you were making hive plugs for smokers. And you were talking about the different wood you collect. That's not my scraps on the floor, but still, I know you're a pack rat when it comes to that stuff.
Yeah.
And you got to find a use for it. So, okay, I got one for you. I just rebuilt the staircase in my house, and I pulled all the stair treads off. And you know how engineered stair treads are. They're some sort of amalgamated wood covered in a veneer. And they're all glued together. If you've ever seen them at Home Depot or whatever. Do you think you could build a hive out of them, or do you think they would delaminate? I was thinking about stacking them. They're 2 inches against each other and building, say, a Lehen's hive out of the scraps. I mean, I got enough that I could build a couple. Would it work, or do you think it would fall apart?
You'd have to see what kind of glue they use, whether it's a waterproof glue or not. One way to tell is just to take a knife and just shave through so you can see the glue line. And if it's a purple, deep maroon, that's resorcing glue, that's waterproof. Or just cut a small
make it
piece.
For inside of a house. I doubt it's waterproof. They wouldn't spend the money on waterproof if they didn't need to, right?
It depends. They may or may not. AC plywood or CDX plywood, the sheathing, that's all waterproof glue. The X stands for exterior. But
I'll have to bring you a scrap and let you look at it. I know you get this and go, yep, you could use this, or no, that ain't going to work.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, like I got time, you know, this winter or something to go build one of these hives. But what did I do with all those stair treads? I've got like 15 of them. I stuck them in my shed. I didn't throw them out. I couldn't. Right. They're beautiful. They're oak. Like, what else would you build out of them? I don't know. But I can't do it.
They have potential.
They've been in service since 1972 or whatever when my house is built, but they're still like beautiful oak stair treads. Anyway, I digress. Did you hear that we're having a symposium in November? Yes. You heard about that, right? I heard that there's a couple guys on the speaker list.
Yeah, a couple guys we know.
Yeah. So Hive Mind. That's the name of it, 2025, hosted by the Northwest New Jersey Beekeepers. This symposium is not a state meeting. It's a club meeting. It's going to be held at the North Hunterdon High School, which is conveniently located at the intersection of State Highway 31 and Interstate 78. So if you can get to Interstate 78, which of course you can from anywhere, it's just a short jaunt from 78. Down 31, and it's a beautiful place. We had Randy Oliver there and other speakers in that facility. It's what's it? The date is November 1st, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., 3:30 p.m. And Hive Mind 2025. What are you talking about? What was your talk on?
I'm going to talk about cutouts and repairs afterward, closing. Opening up the walls and closing them up again.
Okay. But,
and the cutouts, and what I've found through the years, so many, many cutouts. Some interesting things, how the bees construct their nests in these structures, where they locate their brood, etc.
I got a request to do the non-Langstroth hive presentation. Have you ever seen that? The different types of hives?
The one you did at the club picnic. I saw that when you brought a bunch to Alice's place last year.
That was different. This is okay. Yeah, so this will be a different one. This is the one that I did in Canada, and I think I've done it once at EAS, but Aaron Evans, speaking of Aaron Evans, is speaking at that meeting. They have Dr. Robin Underwood, who's doing amazing stuff. She's gonna talk on why are bees defensive. Aaron's talking about business stuff, which did you catch any of her stuff at EAS about the business things? Because I know
I've heard
that
her.
must have been really interesting for you.
Yeah, I've heard her speak twice. It's excellent. Excellent. You've got to hear it. If you're anywhere near North Huntington High School on November 1st, you got to come hear Aaron speak about the business of beekeeping.
You have Vita Bee Health. David Westervelt is going to be speaking about Viroxan, right from somebody. And so I think we've got a really good lineup there. And again, not a state meeting, more like a local symposium that our club is putting on. First time we've ever done it, and we hope to keep doing it if we have success at it. It includes breakfast, lunch, and you can order a Hivemind t-shirt. Pretty cool logo that Adria came up with. I think it was her, yes.
Rick, I
Oh,
think.
Rick did it.
Her husband, yeah.
Yeah. So Saturday, November 1st, if you go to nwnjba.com, right on the homepage, you'll find a link to Hivemind 2025. It's November 1st. What else do you do when you're in November and you're not keeping bees? You go to bee meetings, right? Are you going to
Exactly.
the North American Honeybee Expo this year?
I am.
You
I
went
am.
last
So
year. Tell me about that.
It was fantastic. It really was. The vendor hall was amazing. And
Overwhelming, right?
and the caliber of speakers. I spent more time listening to speakers and very little time in the vendor hall, because there was just so much to listen and learn. But Hilco, I think Hilco brought 14 semis or 16 semi loads. I think three of them were his booth and everything else was product. So, and he was just one of the many. So, it was a great time and looking forward to going back. And then I will be in Louisville three times in a year and a half because now I have to go back and take that fourth.
Fourth test. Yeah, because we're going to Kentucky next year.
Yes, I'll be back.
I presented a keynote at EAS in Kentucky during COVID when they had the shortened thing. So I've been there once before. I don't know what venue we'll be in. It's a little bit of a ride down there.
10 hours about.
Yeah. I'm assuming you guys drove. You went with Doug, yes?
Doug drove. I rode shotgun.
Did you talk bees all the way down?
All the way down, all the
All the
way
way
back.
back. It's like Bob and I when we go on a road trip. Like we try to find reasons to go to do different things. And yeah. All right. Well, we're going to talk about cutouts. You called me this week about a cutout, then found out that somebody it was all taken care of. And I said to you recently, it's been some time since I've done any of those. And I would love to go do one again and maybe a couple of them. I think cutout season's probably done. You've been getting swarm reports. Have you gotten like six of them in the last month? And I'm sure none of them are a real swarm.
I've heard a lot about bee infestations, and that almost all of them are yellow jackets. Although I
Yellow
was talking
jackets are just off the scale this year, aren't they?
about, I was chatting with Bob Gloss. He called me, and I was sitting in the driveway, and we were talking, I don't know, 20, 30 minutes or so, and a little swarm appeared and landed in the magnolia tree right
Is
in
that
front of my
right?
tree. It was about the size of a softball or
You
so.
have a southern magnolia in your yard?
It's not a southern magnolia. It's a magnolia, but I
Does
don't
it
believe
get the big white flowers with the
it.
matchsticks in the middle? You see
Yeah, like
those?
pink and white.
Yeah. You see the bees are scrabbling and they fall out of the tree like.
I have two in the yard here.
I don't know if you saw I was talking with Dave, who hosted our meeting this week, And he's got a magnolia in his driveway. Did you notice?
I did
He's
not.
got a it, when you pull up into his driveway, he's got that little circular round, and right in the middle of it is a huge southern magnolia. It's not as big as the one we have in our yard. But he was telling me one day when I was talking to him, he's like, "Kev, Kev, the tree, it's like zooming. There's so many bees in there." And I said, "Yeah, I know. We have one of those. So if you have a southern magnolia or any magnolias in your yard, count yourself fortunate because plant a tree, feed a bee, right?"
Yeah. Here, I'll give you a funny story about a wood guy. And, I should know trees because of having a sawmill. So my birthday was right around Father's Day. So I told my wife and kids, all I want this year are some basswood trees because we have 4.5 acres. So I wanted 5 basswoods. So we went and got them and I planted them in the yard. I have 3 of them out near the bees and 2 of them, a couple other spots. And then my lot is kind of a funny shaped lot. And it jogs around 2 other properties behind me. I have frontage on 2 roads. And I never mow the one section very much because it's way back at the back edge down near the Muskinecon. And I was mowing there. I do a couple times a year and I look up at the leaf of the tree and I thought, no. I stand back and look. Here I have a double trunk basswood tree
Right there.
right there on my property, 20 inches in diameter, both of them. Enormous tree. But I've never down there in June. I usually mow it in the spring and
That's
mow it in the
funny.
fall. Yeah, so for 23 years I've been here with basswood on my property. And I went out and purchased 5 trees this year, never knowing it was there.
It's all good, right? It still helps the cause. So, James, I gotta say thanks. This has been a blast. Been a long time coming. I love the story of the quest. I'm so appreciative that you found it, and thank you for passing that information on to Tim. If I ever get a hit on somebody, you know, it's funny, is someone sent me something about an episode recorded years and years and years ago. Because you'll never know, right? Someone will hear something and they call and they talk to you like it just happened, and I have no idea what they're talking about. I have to go back and listen to the episode and like, what was this about? I don't even remember. I've done so many of these. But someday, phone's going to ring about this, and I'm going to ping you and go, "We got the book." I hope that's the case, James. That would be
That would be
really a
awesome.
cool ending to this conversation.
Yeah.
So, all
Well,
right.
thank you, Kevin.
Hey,
It's been great
thanks.
fun.
Appreciate it. Have a good one. I'll see you soon.
Okay. Happy beekeeping.
Like our beloved bees, when beekeepers go together, we can accomplish great things. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll catch you on the next episode of the Beekeeper's Corner.